From WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Terry Gross with Fresh Air. On today's Fresh Air, documentary filmmaker Errol Morris talks about his new film, The Fog of War, 11 Lessons from the Life of Robert McNamara. Morris persuaded the former Secretary of Defense, who's now in his 80s, to sit in front of a camera and reflect on his role in World War II and Vietnam. McNamara was one of the architects of the war in Vietnam, but by the time he left the Johnson administration in 1967, he had become disillusioned with the war. Errol Morris's other films include The Thin Blue Line, Mr. Death, and Fast, Cheap, and Out of Control. And classical music critic Lloyd Schwartz reviews a new series of historic classical music performances on DVD called Classic Archive. That's all coming up on Fresh Air. First, the news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Corey Flintoff. The United States has begun fingerprinting and photographing some foreign visitors as they come into the country. It's the start of a new program called U.S. Visit, which is supposed to help prevent terrorists from getting into the United States. NPR's Pam Fessler reports.
The first stage of U.S. Visit only applies to visitors coming in through international airports and seaports. It will be expanded to all border crossings by the end of next year. Visitors will have their pictures taken and fingerprints scanned so the information can be compared with terrorist and other watch lists. Homeland Security Secretary Asa Hutchinson went through the process this morning at Los Angeles International Airport.
It was simple and it was very quick. And to me, it was something that every visitor who comes to the United States will understand is important for our security, but also will help facilitate travel.
But critics note the program has loopholes. It doesn't cover millions of foreigners who don't need U.S. visas, including citizens of Canada and 27 other nations. Pam Fessler, NPR News.
The U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops is preparing to release a survey of bishops nationwide on what they've done to combat sexual abuse by priests. That survey is due to be released tomorrow. But Barbara Blaine, president of the Survivors Network of those abused by priests, says the investigators didn't have access to objective information.
In this case, the interviewers had to rely largely on subjective material that was given voluntarily and given by essentially the same men who have for decades fought to keep the crimes of clergy concealed.
Bishop Wilton Gregory, the president of the council, has said the report shows the bishops are keeping their pledge to protect children and punish abusive priests. The Mars Exploration Rover has sent its first three-dimensional pictures from the surface of Mars. The pictures show a flat plain dotted with small rocks, with three hills visible off in the distance. NPR's Joe Palca has more.
The pictures were taken with the rover's navigational cameras. These are black-and-white cameras mounted on the rover's mast. Project scientists say the most intriguing feature in the pictures is a depression 30 feet in diameter not far from the lander. They've nicknamed the depression Sleepy Hollow. Scientists say it looks like it might be an impact crater that's been filled in with Martian dust. If it is an impact crater, the rocks nearby would have been thrown up from below the surface. Studying these rocks will give scientists a peek inside Mars. There's still a lot of checking out to do before the rover is ready to roll off the lander. Mission managers don't expect roll-off to occur until early next week. Joe Palca, NPR News, at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena.
In stocks, the Dow gained 134 points to close at 10,554. The Nasdaq was up 40 to 2,047. This is NPR News. Former Housing and Urban Development Secretary Mel Martinez has unofficially opened his campaign for the U.S. Senate in Florida, filing papers to allow him to raise funds for the seat being vacated by Democrat Bob Graham. It's one of five seats in the South where a Democratic incumbent is retiring. NPR's Philip Davis has more.
Martinez was one of the highest-ranking Hispanics in the Bush administration, which, supporters say, urged him to run. Martinez also was Florida chairman of President Bush's 2000 presidential campaign, a post that will give him a direct pipeline to some of the country's biggest campaign donors. But the president's brother, Governor Jeb Bush, says the nomination is not about to be handed to Martinez. He's going to have to earn it. And he faces a potentially crowded primary field that may include, among others, Bob Smith, until recently a senator from New Hampshire, and Florida Congresswoman Katherine Harris. As Secretary of State during the 2000 election, Harris became a hero to some Florida Republicans and a polarizing figure to some Democrats. Philip Davis, NPR News, Miami.
The U.S. Army is reportedly considering keeping some soldiers in the service for up to 3 months longer than their enlistments in order to keep up troop strength. The Associated Press quoted Pentagon officials as saying that the plan would extend a so-called stop-loss order that was issued last November to prevent soldiers from retiring or quitting the service while their units were deployed in Iraq or Afghanistan. The new order would keep soldiers from leaving the service for up to 90 days after they return home, even if their enlistments are up. In stocks, the S&P 500 gained 13 points to close at 1122. Corey Flintoff, NPR News, Washington.
The NPR Shop features Driveway Moments, a CD compilation of public radio stories so compelling they won't let you go, at npr.org.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest, Errol Morris, directed the new film, The Fog of War, which has been appearing on many critics' 10 best lists. This documentary is edited from over 20 hours of interviews with Robert McNamara, who served as Secretary of Defense under Presidents Kennedy and Johnson. He was one of the architects of the war in Vietnam, but he said that by the time he left the Johnson administration in 1967, he had become increasingly skeptical about the war and worried that more and more people were being killed and we weren't accomplishing our goals. McNamara has remained an enigmatic figure. For many years, he would not speak about his role in the war. That silence was broken by his 1995 memoir, in which he discussed what led to his growing skepticism, but he disappointed his critics by not apologizing for his role in the war. In Morris's film, McNamara reflects on the lessons he's learned from Vietnam and World War II, in which he helped plan the firebombing of Tokyo. McNamara was the youngest ever Secretary of Defense, age 44, and is now 87 years old. Errol Morris's films investigate the obsessions and motivations of his subjects through intensive interviews. His films include Mr. Death, Fast, Cheap, and Out of Control, and A Thin Blue Line. Here's a clip from the beginning of The Fog of War.
It's almost impossible for our people today to put themselves back into that period. In my 7 years as secretary, we came within a hair's breadth of war with the Soviet Union on three different occasions. 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, for 7 years as Secretary of Defense, I lived the Cold War. During the Kennedy administration, they designed a 100 megaton bomb. It was tested in the atmosphere. I remember this. Cold War? Hell, it was a hot war.
You know, one of the things that really astonished me watching The Fog of War was that McNamara was really lively, anecdotal, interesting, and I always thought of him, among other things, as cold and kind of inaccessible. In other words, that you'd never get anything out of him. what surprised you about actually talking with him?
One of the things I like about interviews, maybe you feel the same way, to me, interviews are investigative. I never know what I'm going to hear. In fact, to the extent that I know what I'm going to hear, I'm not terribly interested. I want to be surprised. I want something unexpected to happen. And that certainly was the case with my interviews with Robert McNamara. A picture of a very different kind of man than I had been familiar with years ago. Seeing him on television, reading about him in the papers. Far more interesting, far more complex man.
Give me an example of something he said that really surprised you.
Well, the most surprising thing was discovering that his role in Vietnam was different than I had thought. Remember, the Vietnam War was known to many people as McNamara's War. He became not only associated with the war, people thought of it as his war, as though he was the person primarily responsible for it. He was the hawk. He was the guy who pushed other people towards escalation, to bombing, to troops on the ground. You want an explanation for how we became mired in Vietnam? Look no further than Robert S. McNamara. And yet, as I got deeper and deeper into this story, my view of him and his role in history changed.
How did it change?
It changed in so many ways. I had read, in retrospect, in 1995, this was his supposed mea culpa for Vietnam.
His memoir.
His memoir. And what surprised me was the book I was reading was so different than the book I saw described in many, many reviews and editorials. Didn't seem to be a mea culpa at all. More this anguished attempt to go back into the past to try to figure out what happened and why it happened. There's this very odd conversation. The Fog of War actually has these recently released presidential recordings. Everybody knows Nixon made recordings. But it's less well known that Kennedy and Johnson recorded their conversations as well. Kennedy recorded cabinet meetings. Johnson recorded phone calls. So you can actually hear the President of the United States talking with McNamara. A front row seat in history, if you like. And there's one powerful conversation. October 2nd, 1963. This is less than 2 months before Kennedy was assassinated. We hear McNamara and the president talking, and McNamara is urging Kennedy to set a timetable, a schedule for getting out of Vietnam. This is the man who we consider to be the worst hawk of all in the administration, the most bellicose advisor of all in the administration.
It's tempting to kind of go over your whole film point by point and talk about all the points that Robert McNamara makes, but I think I should let our listeners see the movie and talk instead about how the movie was made. But first, I do want to just get to a couple of the very interesting points that McNamara makes in the movie. And one of them is in talking about World War II, where he served under General Curtis LeMay, and he participated in the planning of the firebombing of Tokyo, in which 100,000 civilians were killed. And he says something very interesting about war criminals. Why don't we hear this excerpt of your movie? This is an excerpt of Robert McNamara speaking in Errol Morris's documentary, The Fog of War.
I don't fault Truman for dropping the nuclear bomb. The U.S.-Japanese War was one of the most brutal wars in all of human history. Kamikaze pilots, suicide, unbelievable. What one can criticize is that the human race prior to that time and today has not really grappled with what are, I'll call it, the rules of war. Was there a rule then that said you shouldn't bomb, shouldn't kill, shouldn't burn to death 100,000 civilians in a night? LeMay said if we'd lost the war, we'd all have been prosecuted as war criminals. And I think he's right. He, and I'd say I, were behaving as war criminals.
Robert McNamara speaking in the documentary The Fog of War. Errol Morris, when he said that to you, were you surprised to hear his thoughts about what makes a war crime a war crime?
Yes, particularly because this part of the interview happened very early on, probably within the first half hour of my first interview with Robert McNamara. The movie doesn't tell you. There's no flashing light that goes on and says, this is really something new. This is really something extraordinary. So much has been written about the dropping of the two atomic bombs on Japan in 1945. Comparatively little has been written about the firebombing of 67 cities in Japan before we bombed Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And here we have McNamara, who was involved in these firebombings, speak of them as a war crime. Very powerful, because aren't we all used to thinking of World War II as a just war? After all, good and evil were well defined. We were on the side of good, they were on the side of evil. And yet, here is Robert McNamara telling us, yes, that was true, but there is conduct within a just war which is criminal. Very, very powerful and very interesting.
Now, in talking about his role in Vietnam, he certainly gives the impression that he tried to talk President Johnson out of the war, tried to decreasing our presence in Vietnam. Do you believe that that was consistently his point of view with Johnson?
It's a tortured story. I believe that if Kennedy had lived, in all likelihood, there would not have been extensive bombing and 500,000 ground troops in Vietnam. It's one of those great mysteries that can't be really answered for certain. But the story leans in that direction. There is considerable amount of evidence to suggest that's the case. One thing that's really interesting, I sometimes say, well, this revised story about Vietnam that emerges in the fog of war, it's not necessarily a better story. It's just a different story, because it raises a whole set of different questions. If McNamara was opposed to the war, why did he become a part of its escalation? Why did he continue to serve Johnson if he disagreed with his policies? Why did he stay on until 1968? And why, when he left the administration, did he remain silent? The war went on, 69, 70, 71, 72, 73, 74, 75. Between 2 and 3 million Vietnamese died, and 58,000 Americans.
Now, aren't these the questions that he still refuses to answer, the questions that you just raised?
Yes and no. The movie has an epilogue where I return to some of the central mysteries of this story. I feel that they're partial answers, but this is not a movie where every T can be crossed and every I dotted. There are mysteries that remain for me, having made the movie.
My guest is film director Errol Morris. His new documentary about Robert McNamara is called The Fog of War. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is director Errol Morris. His new film, The Fog of War, is an extensive interview with former Secretary of Defense Robert McNamara, reflecting on the lessons he learned from his role in Vietnam and World War II. He reaches several conclusions and has several lessons that he feels like he's learned from his involvement in World War II and the Vietnam War. And one of his conclusions is you need to empathize with your enemy. But he says about Vietnam, we didn't know the Vietnamese well enough to empathize and put ourselves in their shoes. We saw the war in Vietnam as a Cold War. They saw it as a Civil War. And when I heard him say that, I thought, you know, what a true and interesting lesson to have learned and to impart to us. But then I thought for a second, isn't that what the anti-war movement was saying all along? That, you know, this isn't just the Cold War, this is a Civil War. Why are we involved there? I mean, isn't that something that people were shouting at him for years?
Yes. This is a movie with one interview, but sometimes I think they're actually two characters. The 85-year-old McNamara speaking to the 45-year-old McNamara. And one of the questions...
I know exactly what you mean. I mean, that was my, as a viewer, that was my impression too. Yeah.
And one question that keeps coming up again and again, is this the same man? Are these two different men? Mm-hmm. Well, in one sense, of course they're not. But are they the same? And in what way are they different, if they are different? You're absolutely right. Many of the things that McNamara says could have come out of anti-war demonstrators. It could have been things that they said verbatim in 1965. People who really hate McNamara, and there are many, when they hear about the lessons, they say, why do we want to hear anything this man says? Shouldn't he remain silent? My answer is an emphatic no. He has been so much a part of history, and the stories that he tells about history are really interesting and important stories. And they're stories by a man who knows.
You know, you're talking about him being like the 85-year-old McNamara talking to the 40-year-old or 45-year-old McNamara. And I felt as a viewer that there were two versions of me watching the movie, just as there
well,
were.
That's really interesting.
Yeah, and I'll explain what I mean, because like when he talks about...
By the way, it's also true in my case.
Oh, really? Really? Yeah. So
yes.
Well, let me give you my example. When I was watching the movie and he says things like, during the war in Vietnam, his family was so stressed out, his family got ulcers. I can't remember if he got ulcers too. And that, you know, that his family was just like sickened by all of the stress. And one part of me thought, wow, that's really interesting that that it was so stressful on your family. And that's a very kind of, that elicited a very sympathetic response from me. But then the other part of me was saying, well, I should think so. The whole country was divided by this war. The country was at war with itself. Americans were dying. Vietnamese were dying. So many lives of Americans were totally changed by the war.
America was totally changed.
Right.
By the war.
So in that sense, I was thinking, well, you know, sure you'd have ulcers. I mean, geez. So I just felt myself having this constant dialogue with myself about my reactions to him and what he was saying. Tell me about the dialogue you had with yourself making the movie.
Well, my feelings about Vietnam haven't changed over the years. I demonstrated against the war as a young student because I found the war appalling. And now, many, many years later, I still find it appalling. Sometimes I think, am I being too easy on McNamara? Other times I think, am I being too hard on him? One undeniable aspect of the man is that he produces these very, very strong feelings. And yet I feel privileged to have been able to talk to him and to make this movie. It's interesting. I started these interviews before 9/11. The first interview with McNamara was in May of 2001. I never thought that this would be a movie about now, that this would be a movie about today.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, as I continued to work on the film, the themes, the stories, the history that McNamara describes became more and more and more relevant to what is going on in the world today.
There are some people who've seen the movie who think that in the movie, McNamara is still doing a bit of, you know, lying, deceiving, exaggerating to suit his case. And I'm wondering if you think that he's doing some of that, and if you, in between your interviews with him over the 2 year or so period, if you went to, you know, historians and asked them for their take on things that he said to see if it jived with their understanding of recent history.
I sometimes think of people like a deck of cards. We think that people have to be one thing when in fact they're many things. You said that people look at the movie and they say, well, McNamara is not being forthcoming here. McNamara is being evasive. McNamara is lying. McNamara is making remark after remark, which is self-serving in some way. My answer is, of course, he's human. It is all there. But what is also there is what I would call an honest attempt to grapple with the past, to grapple with his own history and the history that he was part of. You ask me, have I talked to historians? And the answer is endlessly. And it's not as though there is a unanimity of opinion.
Absolutely.
On many.
Yeah.
Also, what's so interesting is that in history, you work with the information that you have at hand. You know, I believe that there's a real history back there, but often important pieces are missing. These presidential recordings from the Kennedy and Johnson libraries have only recently been released. And yes, they provide important pieces of evidence that change our understanding of history.
Errol Morris's new film is called The Fog of War. He'll be back in the second half of the show. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.
Major funding for Fresh Air is provided by Barnes & Noble Books, publishers of Carrie Scheider's American Yoga, The Paths and Practices of America's Greatest Yoga Masters, available at Barnes & Noble bookstores and online at bn.com. From the listeners of WHYY in Philadelphia, where Fresh Air is produced, and by Delacorte Press, a division of Random House, publisher of Iron Fire, a novel of the Knights of Malta and the Last Battle of the Crusades by David Ball, author of Empires of Sand. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
Coming up, more with director Errol Morris about his latest film, The Fog of War. We're listening to music from the film, composed by Philip Glass. And Lloyd Schwartz reviews Classic Archive, a new series of historic classical music performances collected on DVD. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with film director Errol Morris. His new film, The Fog of War, is edited from over 20 hours of interviews with Robert McNamara, who served as Secretary of Defense under Presidents Kennedy and Johnson. McNamara was one of the architects of the war in Vietnam, but by the time he left the Johnson administration in 67, he had grown skeptical of the war. After refusing to discuss the war in public, he broke his silence with his 1995 memoir, which explained his anxieties about the war but offered no apology for his role in it. You know, I interviewed McNamara in 95 after his memoir was published.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, as I said, I've never seen him be as interesting and lively and anecdotal as in your movie. And when I interviewed him, I guess, you know, all of my instincts were, ask him why he hasn't apologized if he knew all this in advance. Ask him if he thinks he owes an America an apology or an explanation. And I haven't listened back to the interview, but I think that's where I kept where I kept heading. And I'm wondering if your instinct was ever to do that yourself, because the movie isn't that. You're not saying, well, then apologize. You know, you're letting him speak. You're letting him tell his story, and a lot of interesting things emerge. And those things are very lively and attention getting. I mean, you want to hear it, and whether you end up completely believing it or not, you want to hear it. But was there ever an instinct in you saying, "Get him to apologize"? You know.
Sure. And, absolutely.
But did you kind of suppress that and just like let him talk, or did you keep kind of getting back to that?
Did I kind of suppress it? I like the idea of suppressing it. Maybe. It's interesting because when you say there's something missing, if people say, well, McNamara didn't go as far as I would like, or McNamara really didn't apologize, or McNamara didn't really confess, I would ask myself, what is it that they want to hear? What exactly are they looking for? And I ask myself, do I want to hear McNamara apologize for the war? And here's my answer. Not really.
Mm-hmm. Why not?
Because I don't think there is any apology for the war in this sense. How do you apologize for the death of 58,000 Americans and 2 to 3 million Vietnamese? I think he's done something far more interesting. He has gone back over the history of the war. Don't forget, this is the man who ordered the Pentagon Papers to be created. If you like, it's that same instinct to go back over the past, to look at it, to try to understand it. For the totally unsympathetic, the people who will hate McNamara no matter what, they will look at this attempt to go back over the past as excuse-making. Yeah, sure, he's going back over the past, but he's going over the past just to provide a gloss on the past, to make himself look better. My answer is no. When he suggests that he and LeMay were war criminals in World War II, and he tells a story that is so different from any other story I've heard about that period, I don't look at it as an attempt to whitewash the past, but as a sincere attempt to go back over the past, to think about the past.
Mm-hmm. When you interviewed McNamara, and this was about 24 hours worth of interviews we're talking about, do you think he ever expected that you were warming him up and just laying the trap, and in the end there would be an ambush? Because that is an interview technique.
It's not my technique.
But he wouldn't necessarily know that. I mean, because you never know till it's over.
I mean, I'm always surprised. You know, I said that for me, interviews are investigative.
Mm-hmm.
When I was making The Thin Blue Line years ago, a movie credited with getting an innocent man out of prison in Texas. I was surprised how, if I let people alone, if I allow them to talk without interrupting them, I could learn so much more than in an adversarial interview. Maybe it's a difference in philosophy. Because when you're playing the Mike Wallace game, a well-known game in interviewing,
mm-hmm.
back the subject against the wall,
mm-hmm.
Try to get him to contradict himself. It's kind of the police idea of interviewing. You have a subject, break him down, make him fess up. I'm interested in something different. I'm not really interested in backing my subjects into a corner. I'm interested in learning something about how they see the world.
Your interview with McNamara, as it is in the movie The Fog of War, starts with him having to pick up where he left off, I guess because like the tape or the film had run out, and he has to like pick up in the middle of the sentence. In fact, let me just play this little excerpt.
Now, I remember exactly the sentence I left off on. I remember how it started, and it was cut off in the middle, but you can fix it up some way. I don't want to go back, introduce the sentence, because I know exactly what I wanted to say.
Go ahead.
Okay. Any military commander who is honest with himself or with those he's speaking to will admit that he has made mistakes in the application of military power. He's killed people unnecessarily, his own troops or other troops, through mistakes, through errors of judgment. 100 or thousands or tens of thousands, maybe even 100,000. But he hasn't destroyed nations. And the conventional wisdom is don't make the same mistake twice. Learn from your mistakes. And we all do. Maybe we make the same mistake three times, but hopefully not four or five. There'll be no learning period with nuclear weapons. You make one mistake, and you're going to destroy nations.
That's Robert McNamara in the very opening of The Fog of War, and my guest is the filmmaker, Errol Morris. You know how I was talking about how I had two reactions to a lot of the movie? I had two reactions to seeing this part of the interview, especially at the very beginning. Part of me said, wow, he's being kind of manipulative here. He knows exactly what he's going to say. He's saying it. He's you know, he's so kind of conscious of himself as an interviewee. But then the other part of me said, yes, he should be. He has something really important to say here about, you know, lessons about nuclear weapons and being, you know, being in a position of power in the nuclear era. This is really important. I'm glad he remembered what he wanted to say. Tell me why you wanted to lead with this, in a way, very self-conscious moment of him saying, I'm going to pick up exactly where I left off. I know what I want to say.
Well, among other things, he's a control freak.
Right.
And it's interesting to be reminded of that fact at the very beginning.
At the very
of the
beginning,
movie.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
In fact, we see at the very beginning of the movie, we see him in 1964 doing pretty much the same thing that he's doing in 2001.
Now, at one point, he says to you that he learned early on, never answer the question that is asked of you. Answer the question that you wish had been asked of you. And he says, and quite frankly, I follow that rule. It's a very good rule. Did he follow that rule with you? Did he, like, consistently answer what you wanted him, you know, what you had asked? Or did he tell you, did he just answer the questions he wish you had asked? You know what I mean? How much did he kind of control what the answers and what the message was going to be?
I had an argument with my editor, Karen Schmier, because in the dailies, in the actual interview itself, after he says this, I ask him, are you doing this to me? And he smiles and laughs. She wanted to put it in. I didn't, because I felt it was already implied.
Right.
But of course, there's always an element of that. there's an element of that here and now talking to you. Everybody wants to answer the questions they wish they had been asked. McNamara is not alone in that respect.
My guest is film director Errol Morris. His new documentary about Robert McNamara is called The Fog of War. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guest is Errol Morris, and his new documentary, The Fog of War, is an interview with Robert McNamara. Now, one of the things that you are really able to do in your movies is take what some people might think, oh, that's just going to be a talking head movie, and you make it very cinematic. The person who's speaking is shot in a simple but visually interesting way, not because there's like a lot of crazy things going on in the background. It's just framed well, and then it is intercut occasionally with, in McNamara's case, with footage of the Vietnam War, footage of World War II, with I think a very little bit of reenactments, kind of visual images that evoke the era. Can you talk a little bit about how you see the job of making what is basically an interview into a movie, into something that will be cinematic, that we will actually want to look at for a couple of hours, or nearly a couple of hours?
You're absolutely right in describing these stories as anecdotal. Amazing anecdotes about central historical events. Whenever I hear a story, particularly if it's a good story, images immediately come to mind. And it becomes very hard to resist the temptation to shoot those images. In fact, usually I am unable to resist the temptation and I go ahead and do it. Part of The Fog of War is a story of dropping things from the sky. Bombing, if you like. And we have many instances of it in the story, from the firebombing of Tokyo to bombing in Vietnam. There's another curious story among the many jobs that Robert McNamara has had over the years. He was also president of the Ford Motor Company. Not so well known, he pushed for safety at a time where safety was never really thought about. He argued for padded dashes, collapsible steering wheels, and first and foremost, seat belts. And he tells this remarkable story. This is the kind of thing you can't possibly make up, about how they dropped skulls down a stairwell at one of the dormitories at Cornell in order to determine the effect that crashes, automobile crashes, had on the human body. An instance where dropping things actually produces good rather than evil. And yes, I illustrated it. I sometimes think of my movies like a dream. A dream about 20th century history. A series of questions, of puzzles, of mysteries. And the hope is that the visuals take you deeper and deeper into those mysteries. That is, if I've done my job well.
Before you made movies, you were a private investigator. Now, you've said that as a movie documentarian, when you interview somebody, your goal isn't to do the police interrogation method where, you know, you're throwing them against the wall and you're throwing those questions at them until you wear them down and they're forced to tell you the truth. You want to know how they see the world and how they see their place in the world. So you don't have that kind of interrogation technique. But what about when you were a private investigator and you had to kind of surreptitiously get to the bottom of the story? I don't know if you actually talked to any of the people you were investigating or people who were related to the investigation, but did you have to use and to perfect a very different kind of way of verbally getting to the truth?
No. I started interviewing people long before I became a filmmaker. I used to do interviews with a tape recorder. This should be something familiar. No picture, just audio.
Mm-hmm.
And I had this, call it a perverse enthusiasm for doing interviews where I hardly talked at all. It's something that carried over to my filmmaking and to my work as a private investigator. The big surprise, there was hardly any difference between working as a private investigator and working as an interviewer making a film. After all, what is the job at its heart? It's listening to people, creating a situation where people want to talk to you, want to tell you things, and putting yourself in a position where you can listen. I once thought, I was in the middle of this murder investigation in the Thin Blue Line, could I make this movie with actors? And the answer is absolutely no. Couldn't be done. Because when you have the real people on the screen, you're put in this strange relationship. Maybe the same relationship that I have with them, talking to them in a room or a studio. Who are these people? Can I believe them? Why are they saying what they're saying? What are they thinking? And if I've done my job correctly, that same kind of mystery should emerge in the film as well. You and the audience should be put in that same position that I found myself.
I know you've made some TV commercials for...
Oh, not some.
Lots?
Many, 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 many TV commercials.
Do you want to name some of the people you've made them for? Companies?
Fairly long list. Well, I like this idea. This gives me an opportunity to do a commercial for my commercials. I've done them for Cisco, Intel, Apple, IBM, Ford, Honda, Miller High Life. Someone fairly recently came up to me and said, I really, really, really admire your work. And I said, thank you very much. And then they said, those Miller High Life commercials are fantastic.
Well, I'm sure you have a pretty nice budget for those commercials. Are there techniques that you've learned making commercials that you've been able to adapt to making your movies?
Absolutely. It goes both ways.
Uh-huh.
Stuff that I've learned making movies that applies to making commercials and vice versa. I've been lucky. I get to do interesting work. I get to do interesting work on my own and in commercials as well.
Well, Errol Morris, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you for having me.
Errol Morris's new documentary is called The Fog of War. It's now playing in New York, Los Angeles, and Washington, D.C., and will open nationwide on January 23rd. Coming up, classical music critic Lloyd Schwartz reviews a new series of historic classical music performances on DVD. This is Fresh Air. A new series of historic classical music performances on DVD features some of the 20th century's most famous musicians. Classical music critic Lloyd Schwartz has the review.
Classical music lovers fall more or less into two categories. The ones who think that recent performances of classical music have never been better, and those who believe that the performances of the past will never be equaled. Now the new technology has been making the old technology more available. EMI has a new series on DVD, Classic Archives, in which major 20th century musicians, filmed mostly in the 1960s and 70s, are represented by complete performances of substantial works. The impressive list includes cellist Mstislav Rostropovich playing the five Beethoven cello sonatas with pianist Sviatoslav Richter, Russian violinist David Oistrakh playing a Prokofiev sonata for two violins with his son Igor, conductors Leopold Stokowski, Herbert von Karajan and Carlo Maria Giulini, French mezzo-soprano Regine Crespin, and the delightful Spanish soprano Teresa Berganza. There are legendary figures like violinist Jascha Heifetz and pianist Arthur Rubinstein. But some lesser-known artists are at least as interesting, like the elegant Russian conductor Igor Markevich. Here he is in 1963, conducting the scherzo of Shostakovich's cheeky First Symphony. Each DVD also includes a bonus feature of even rarer historic material. On the Markevich disc, for example, there's a precious film of the 83-year-old Igor Stravinsky conducting his Firebird Suite with the New Philharmonia Orchestra. Many musicians believe that Stravinsky was not a technically proficient conductor, but watching him makes visible why listening to his recordings is so mesmerizing. The bonus on the Giulini disc is an electrifying rehearsal of Rossini's Semiramide Overture, conducted by Toscanini's brilliant young disciple Guido Cantelli, who might have surpassed even his master if he had not been killed in a plane crash at the age of 36. On the Glenn Gould disc, the bonus material is a haunting short silent film showing the young pianist's hands in slow motion. The main part of the DVD is a documentary called Glenn Gould, The Alchemist, filmed in Toronto by the distinguished filmmaker Bruno Mont-Saint-Jean in 1974, after Gould had stopped performing in public. We hear him spouting some of his fascinating, sometimes off-the-wall musical opinions. But the film also proves that at a time when his commercial recordings didn't seem inspired, he could still play with thrilling concentration and profound expression, as in Bach's Sixth Partita, which he performs complete on the DVD.
Thank you.
Glenn Gould's other selections range from heartbreaking short pieces by 17th century English composers William Byrd and Orlando Gibbons, whom Gould calls his favorite composer, to such 20th century masterpieces as Berg's Piano Sonata and Webern's Variations for Piano. It's startling to see the close-ups of Gould's hands in 1974. They look as soft and pink and childlike as they did 20 years earlier in the silent film.
Lord Schwartz is classical music editor of the Boston Phoenix. He reviewed the new Classic Archive DVD series on EMI. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our senior producer today is Roberta Sherrock. Our interviews and reviews are produced and edited by Amy Sallet, Phyllis Myers, Naomi Person, Monique Nazareth, Patty Leswing, Ian Chillog, and Jessica Chu. Anne-Marie Baldonado directed the show. I'm Terry Gross.
Tapes and transcripts of Fresh Air are available at 1-877-213-7374 or on the Internet at www.burrells.com. Support for Fresh Air comes from the listeners of WHYY in Philadelphia, where Fresh Air is produced, and by TIAA CREF, offering financial solutions to people in education as well as investors nationwide, TIAA-CREF.org. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
Satirist Al Franken spent 8 days in December on a USO tour, performing for the troops in Iraq, Afghanistan, Uzbekistan, and Kuwait. On the next Fresh Air, Al Franken talks with us about the tour and does some of his material from the show. Franken's latest book is the bestseller Lies and the Lying Liars Who Tell Them. I'm Terry Gross. Join us for the next Fresh Air.